So this is the artist panel at No Such Convention at Vassar College, February 18th. Why don't we introduce ourselves?
Hi, I'm Desi.
What do you do, Desi?
I draw and letter comic books.
Okay. I'm Tom Quackenbush. I'm just interrogating these people, all of whom are very, very talented. I can say that having looked at their websites.
I'm Pete Tarkalich. I do the webcomic Bardsworth.
Very good. Very funny.
I'm Kez. I do two webcomics, What It Takes and The War of Winds.
Okay. And I'm J.M. DeSantis. I'm a writer and artist. I have two comics going right now. That's my chime, I guess.
Yeah. You leveled up.
Your time is up.
Yeah. Gentleman Cthulhu is my webcomic, and Chadia is my traditional comic through Rosarium Publishing.
I like that company. So, why do you do what you do? Why do you draw or create the art that you do?
I suppose because I'm an obsessive maniac and I can't let it go. I've actually tried quitting twice, and it doesn't work. I love what I do.
So. They haven't come out with the patch for it yet.
Yeah, no. So, you know, it's, no, but honestly, like, it's the reason I get up in the morning. I love writing. I love telling stories. I love drawing. So, yeah, that's why.
As far back as I can remember, I've always loved drawing. I actually made my first comic book when I was in, like, 7th or 8th grade, and it was just stapled together, and it was an Iron Man ripoff called Techno Man. And it was god awful, but I loved doing it, and I just kept drawing after that. Now I am where I am today. God help me.
I think for me, I was just really shy, and that seems to be the one thing I do fairly well. And so, you know, when I do a comic book, it's my world, my voice, and no one else can tell me how to feel, how to think, and I can think about it over a long period of time. So I think for me, it's actually a way of communicating without being censored.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because you did work for DC Comics, and I always picture comic companies as being very rigid, like, here's my creativity, here's my art, and they're like, no, do it again. Do it the same way artists have been doing it for 50 years. Do you feel that way?
No, and yes. It's in some ways it's a lot more fluid than it is, in some ways more. Like, I have seen them pull comics and comic book events that were not events almost overnight. Like, it's been crazy. At the same time, I've also seen, maybe a little bit less artistic freedom than I would like. But yeah, you know, those things, they're great companies. There's a lot of talented, passionate people who work for those companies, but those companies are machines. I mean, 3DC Comics, we were publishing, what, like 80 comics a month? You know?
Wow.
They're big machines. And so there's a lot of good, and there's some side effects, you know, to that. I think if you're a writer, you know, you can almost have best of both worlds, because you can write Batman and you can write your own Image comic. If you're an artist, unless you're John Romita Jr. Or a couple other guys, it's a little harder, because it takes... I don't think anyone understands how much time it really takes to do a comic properly and well. So.
Any questions from the audience yet? All right.
I still have to chime in.
Sorry. Oh, please, chime in.
I approached art from the back end. I started as a writer, and I really wanted to make what I saw an actual visual thing, and so I got real deep into comics. So I've been doing comics for 14 years now, and it started as a way to see it, to make it real, and it ended as a great method of, I guess, escapism. My day job is a very scientifically rigid lifestyle. I'm in the lab, I'm doing research all the time. I go home, I let loose. It's just all art, it's all comics, it's wonderful. That's why I keep doing it.
Do you guys feel like you're successful right now? I know that with artists, a lot of people have imposter syndrome. Even though we, from the outside, look in and we're so impressed by you, you still have these, you know, long nights of doubt where you're like, what am I even doing? Is this any good? Do you feel that way?
No.
No. Good. Well, you should feel confident.
Perhaps I have an over-healthy sense of ego. I judge success as, you know, multiple criteria. Do you like what you do? Are you able to keep doing it without putting yourself out in the cold? Are you able to make what you are doing real? As in, can you make a physical thing and can you sell it? Or digitally, can you make a digital download and can you sell it? Are you able to, in some way, recoup your time or your effort or your material costs? I don't really consider it as a thing of fame. I don't consider it as people know who you are. I do consider it as, this is my piece of work that I did, and they like it, and then they buy it. That's my definition.
God, I wish I thought like that.
Yeah.
No, wouldn't it be nice?
That would be so much easier for me.
Does anyone else want to tackle that?
I was going to say, I'm very confident and I feel successful in what I've done as well. I've had those moments early on in my career, quote unquote, where I wondered about that. Like, am I a real artist? Do I have to suffer for my art, or am I an imposter? Yeah, and the truth is, I love what I do. There's other people that love what I do, and I feel great about that. So I've, you know, over the years, I've come to feel, okay, I'm a success at this.
Yeah, I guess for me it's kind of a mixed bag. I mean, I think the doubts and the things that I don't feel successful about probably change as I move up. So I guess like I'm always striving for more. So like I don't know that I'll ever feel like I've reached exactly what I want. But at the same time, yeah, I can be very content with everything I've done so far. So yeah, it's a little bit of both, you know. Certainly on certain criteria, yeah, I've definitely feel like I've made it, and I certainly have things that I can offer back to people who, you know, think like they still haven't gotten to where I've gotten. But you know, there's so much further I want to go. So you know, it's hard to define whether or not, you know, that I feel completely successful or comfortable with that yet.
I'm very much in the self-doubt camp. I'm proud of the things I've done, but also, you know, when you, it depends. Like I, you know, I always have this argument with people where I feel like, as long as you can communicate your idea, like that's the best thing you have to do. If you look at like the peanuts, they're not well-drawn things, but they perfectly represent the thing that is they need. There's another side of that, which is craft, and how, you know, and for me, I guess is, can I take the things in my head and bring them out to the page? And the answer is no. I'm getting closer. You know, I take drawing courses and I practice, and you know, you talk to different artists, and you look at different work, and you have your inspiration, and everything I've done, I'm really proud of. At the same time, I like looking at it because I can remember where I was and what I was thinking, but I have a very hard time where I can look at the technical aspect of it and think, this is so off, like light doesn't work this way, or this out of proportion, and I think for me there's a constant refinement of the craft, proportion, perspective, lighting, your angles, your compositions, that really, you know, I can't say that's like it's a struggle. It can be a struggle. And I think as I get older, it's sometimes harder to find the time for that and, you know, make a living and see your friends and have a relationship. And it's, I think as I get older, there's a balance that needs to happen too, while trying to make a living at doing this, and trying to get better. And, it can be really fun, but it could be just really, really challenging, and it's almost like a need.
Yeah.
I guess that sort of brings up, do you feel constrained by what you've done before? Like, Charles Schulz making peanuts, if he suddenly is like, you know what, I really want to emulate some Renaissance painting, they'd be like, no, do Snoopy now. Do you feel like you have this body of work behind you, and you are proud of it to differing extents, but it's sort of, do you feel like that dictates what you have to do now?
No, actually, for me, I think I've kind of always tried to stay away from that. there's so much that I'm interested in doing, and it's so broad. I mean, I don't just do comics. You know, I write poetry. I write short stories, and even the subject matter of everything kind of changes from thing to thing. I mean, Gentleman Cthulhu is like this humorous horror comic, you know, based on Lovecraft and classic horror stories, where Chadiana is a dark fantasy series with a female protagonist based in kind of like an Indian setting. So, you know, I can do those two projects, and I don't feel like one necessarily, you know, affects the other in, you know, how I'm going to be perceived as a creator, or even what the expectations of the audience should be for me. If anything, yeah, to a certain extent, I guess I kind of fight that a bit. You know, I don't want to just be pigeonholed as the guy that just does this. Yeah.
As for me, I've seen it happen to other creators where they try to do a radical shift in style and their audience freaks out and leaves them. I did not have that experience. I started out with a full-color, full-page graphic novel type story. It burned me out horribly. I switched to a monochromatic strip adventure story so I can produce the content much faster, has a much better readership, and most of my fans actually changed from the first comic to the second comic. Radical shift in style, radical shift in color, size, everything. And I took that as a positive cue to say that, well, I'm just going to do whatever the hell I want, and everyone's going to be okay with it, because I'm the one making it, and you're going to deal with it. But that's just how I feel about that, personally.
I think in terms of my audience, I kind of do feel like I don't have the flexibility to do a lot of the other things I want, and it's mostly just due to my lifestyle. I have two kids now, and you know, I'm taking care of the house. We just bought a house, so I'm taking care of that at the same time. And Bardsworth is the one thing that everybody really likes. I've tried other projects that have gotten a few people here and there, but for the most part, my Bardsworth audience doesn't really dig some of my other stuff. And that's the more important thing. So I feel like that deserves most of my attention, whereas everything else is kind of just icing on the cake if I can get to it.
Any other questions from the audience?
Can I ask a sub-question?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, based on what you guys are saying, there seems to be a difference between your fans supporting your work versus your fans supporting you. Have you found that to be the case? Because with me in webcomics, and mostly a completely digital medium for me, my fans support me. They'll support my work no matter what I'm making because they're fans of what I do. What do you guys think about that?
You know, it's a funny thing. For me, I think I'm still trying to get a pulse on like where my fan base is. But I get the impression that my Chadiana fans are not the fans for Gentleman Cthulhu. So I have like two separate growing fan bases at the same time. And I'm okay with that. So, yeah, it doesn't...
Yeah, I definitely feel the same way.
Yeah.
I think the people... I have a Bardsworth Patreon, and I think most of the people, if not all of them, are supporting Bardsworth. I mean, they're supporting me at the same time, but they are supporting Bardsworth because it's something they read regularly. It's something they enjoy reading. And I don't think I would necessarily, if I started a Patreon for one of my other books or something, I don't think I would get nearly...
But what if it was not a Bardsworth Patreon, Patreon, however you say it? What if it was a Pete Tarkalidge Patreon?
That's a good question.
Well,
I don't even think I could answer that without taking a survey.
Interestingly, you know, not to self-promote in this moment, but I'm going to be starting a Patreon in March, and it's going to be for just my work.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, you know, I'll see how that goes. Yeah, you know, because, you know, again, my fan base is kind of spread out, so I'll find out how that works.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to interject my own. I'll do it more.
Tom, you're a writer. You can say it.
I know. During that, I'm a different level of artist, and I'll talk more during the writer panel tomorrow. But my publisher, Double Dragon, said, like, I want you guys to be a brand unto yourselves. That if we go under, or if you move on, you keep your fans. That they're not, you know, just stuck on the last thing you did, or you know, the series you're doing. That your fans are for you. They're not for the publisher. They're not for the book. They're for you. And I thought that was a nice thought. It was kind of underwhelming to hear that from your publisher. Like, even if we go under, we care about you.
Well, Tom, it's actually interesting you say that, because I think that's kind of I guess in a roundabout way, what I've been talking about as far as my career goes, I think I've been trying to build a brand just around me. So whatever I do, you know, maybe not every fan is going to like everything I do, but they'll be coming to my work specifically. Yeah. You know?
I think it's also hard because I personally, I want them to care about the work, and then I just want to take a step back. Like, doing things like panels at conventions, that builds your brand. But I'm like, shouldn't I be over there writing? Like, do you ever feel like, you know, it's all nice that I'm doing this, I'm building my brand, but I should be over there drawing?
Never at a convention, but on social media, yes.
Oh, God, yes.
I'm not great with social media at all.
Yeah.
And I think what's just like, you know, in terms of like fans, don't think I have any. Like, you know, like it's like I'm the guy who, like, I've always done like one shots. I'm working on something now that may continue, but I've always done like one shot. We did a horror comic together. Mm-hmm. We did some anthologies. But I'm like the guy, like, if you want to do a comic, if you want to print it, if you want it lettered, if you want it colored, if you want it drawn, like, I can do all of that stuff. You want to put on a comiXology, like, so I, you know, I think my experience has been more of, like, a guy who can, like, facilitate someone else, either do my stuff or facilitate someone else to get their stuff out there in whatever capacity that they're lacking. So I think my professional experience has been just a little bit different with that.
But I definitely, sort of tying into what you said, I feel like artists now have to do all the work. Like, you don't just make the art. Like, you market yourself, you market it, you know, you look for new opportunities. And I don't know that like, 20, 30 years ago was the paradigm. Yeah, how do you guys feel about that?
Having two jobs.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you gotta find people who are gonna network with you, people who can share their audiences. It's really important. Communities where you can foster each other's growth, people who can help you out with social media, share all your posts. And it's especially hard when you start out as an artist and you don't have any of those contacts. Where do you begin? You know, is it Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter? Where are you going to go first? And so it's so helpful to just have knowledgeable people who can help you out, give you a little boost.
This sort of ties into it, but what's your weirdest fan reaction? Like, with social media, we see a lot more of what our fans are thinking of us in real time. And even, like, at conventions like this, so have you had a strange fan reaction?
And I've never had a strange fan reaction. I can tell you that the oddest request I received from somebody at a convention. What's the rating on this?
We're in the mug. We can say what we want.
Oh, okay.
What's the mug? Can't be illegal?
No, it can't be activity? Illegal.
Okay.
So if it sounds illegal, it was fictional.
Okay. Well, I was, the first convention I ever did was Big Apple Con on Pier 96 when Wizard World did it. It was the only year they did it. Yeah. And I went there with just a small set of prints, and I was doing Lovecraft work even then. And I had a guy come up to my table, and he had a kid on each arm. I guess one was his son and his son's friend. And he asked me if I had any tentacle porn, you know. That was kind of off-putting. I was told him no and thank you, but that was a little strange, that whole situation. Yeah, so especially because the two kids
That's
were right with him. Yeah,
That's really
so
messed up.
It was. Yeah, I'll never forget that. Yeah.
I had online for my comic What It Takes. So it's post-apocalyptic. A lot of people have died, but it takes place in the U.S. So it's a multicultural survivorship. And I had one reader get very, very offended that I had a Muslim woman in my comic. And he went off on my comments, like a whole string of rants about a lot of stuff. And I had to actually post something on my site, taking a stand, and, you know, boot that reader off. Didn't care what they thought, obviously. That was the weirdest vitriolic thing that I've ever experienced as a creator. I did not expect that. In 2017, but there it is.
I guess I'm waiting for that to happen to me with the work I'm doing. But
I don't know, man. Your work's cool. I read through it at my table after I bought it.
But there's a lot of weirdos out there.
That's true. Is all your stuff online?
Well, the Gentleman Cthulhu stuff is. Chadiana only like just a piece of it.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but it was online, and I don't know, just because of the subject matter,
mm-hmm.
you know. I mean, not to get on a whole thing about it, but yeah, I sometimes wonder if I'm going to start getting...
What's that saying? Even negative news is good news or whatever?
No such thing as bad press.
Yeah, here we go.
I don't know.
Can I ask you guys, how do you guys divide... like, you know, you say you work a day job, you come home, you need to draw, you need to finish it, you need to post it, you interact with your fans. What's the percentage, roughly, of, like, drawing versus online versus, you know, getting it together to put online? Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. I guess, well, you know, Chadian is different because it's traditionally published, but with Gentleman Cthulhu, they don't take me that long. I can write a script in 15 minutes. I draw it in about 2 hours, and I letter it in about an hour with the scanning and everything, and then it's up. So, which you would think I would be getting a lot more done, but, you know, Chadian takes up so much more time. And then, you know, just... time promoting it online is just a few minutes, you know, here and there on social media. I haven't done too much promoting with it because Chadian is kind of the main thing, and that was this extra side project that I was kind of doing for fun. But since it's sort of catching on a little bit, I probably am going to start investing a little more time into it, promoting it too.
For me, I don't know, because my life is kind of a mess right now. In terms of time, we've had so many life shifts. Usually it's like 2 to 3 hours a night throughout the week. Weekends I take for myself and work on other projects or whatever. But for Bardsworth, it's from script to promotion. Yeah, probably about 2 to 3 hours a night.
Do you feel like you have any moral responsibility as an artist? Like, you spoke about how you have a Muslim character, someone flipped out. Do you feel like you have to almost push a certain agenda now? Or, like, do you feel an obligation to be inclusive?
I don't consider it being inclusive to represent what is the natural state in America. So I would think it would be really weird to have a cast of only white male characters because that doesn't represent what is America. So my protagonist is a white female, yes, but there's a lot of minority characters because they exist, period.
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny. When I created Chadian, it was kind of out of the moral obligation. So I there's too many white guys in spandex and comics, so I did.
It's true.
You know. That was like a big motivating factor. I mean, I always had wanted to do a female character, and yeah, I mean, there was a lot of inspirations, motivations for Chadian, but yeah, the main one was I just wanted to see something very different, so I went with pretty much the antithesis of what you normally see in comics.
I think that's probably a good move, too, because the market, there's a glut of the white men in spandex. So, you know, people just look through, oh, he's got a big jaw, brunette guy, big jaw. Oh, look, a woman.
In spandex.
And her skin is not, like, as white as milk? Maybe I want to pick this up.
Yeah.
I've been struggling with this question a lot recently, not to get too political. I mean, again, I don't have anything ongoing, and I think maybe that's a little different. If you know, if you have some ongoing, you have your characters and you have your cast. But I think what just comes to what is the role? If you say you're an artist, what is the role? And I think there's a fine line between, you know, you are spreading ideas. You make a comic and show it to one person versus you make a comic and it catches on, you sell 20,000 copies. Same if you write, same if you do music. You are part of your job is to communicate something and spread some sort of idea. And with that, I do think there's a certain responsibility, especially when things are a little raw.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I think it's also your responsibility as a creative person to take your time and research and say something that you need to say and not because there's a public pressure to do so. You know, if I'm going to speak on an issue, whether I'm right or wrong, I want to be not only as well-informed, but I really want to take the time to understand what my views are, so when there's an opposing view, we can have an intellectual debate about it versus screaming, if that arises. So I think it's a hard question.
Well, and I think the arts ask tough questions. We have a question from the audience?
Kind of the same, a different question. Just to what extent does the audience's reaction affect your decisions for the future and your whole growth as an artist? Does the audience's reaction play a big part, a little part? If that makes sense?
It depends. If what I'm trying to say is not in agreement or something comfortable with the audience, I don't know that I care. And I do apologize to my audience if, you know, they now that's a shocking thing for me to say. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, if it was a problem of the message not being communicated clearly enough or something wrong with, like, a craft part of it, you know, not content, then, yeah, I mean, that would be something that I guess I would respond to and you know, try to work out or whatever. But, you know, again, going back to the Chadiana thing, I don't think, and I did this, I've been doing Chadiana for 5 years, so it's not something that arose because of any recent political and cultural things going on. I think I was kind of ahead of the curve on it. I did it because it was something that I felt was important to say and important to do. And there are a lot of issues I tackle in there, including abuse and things like that. Yeah, I mean, if nobody liked it, I would still feel the book is necessary.
Okay.
So, yeah, that wouldn't affect it.
So, what would you do if you were guaranteed it would be a success? Like, you can do any artistic thing at all, and it'll sell a million copies if that's what you want. Like, it would be a guaranteed success. What would you do?
It would be great. It would be nice. It would be great. I mean, you know, wouldn't work a second job. but... that's almost asking, what if you're rich, or what if you made it, or whatever the hell that is. When I was little, like, I wanted to draw Spider-Man. And so one of these days, I would still like to draw Spider-Man. But, you know, you get older, and you learn different things, you have different influences. And in my head, there's about two or three projects that, before I die, I want to at least be able to do these, say, three projects that best of my ability and have them out there. But the thing that I always think of is, you know, I went to art school, like, two different art schools and took art classes. I would love to be big enough where I could support my friends and encourage their work. Like, if I had a lot of money, that's what I would do. And I also, there's always this talk about publishing is dead. And I don't think publishing is dead. I think it's changed. You know, I don't particularly think that you can make a lot of money doing a book, writing or drawing, when you have a staff of 300 people behind it that you need to feed. But, I mean, everyone here is writing and drawing and doing the pre-press and doing the promotion. So let's say you've got a crew of 5 people. There's got to be some sort of way to make a living publishing, whether it's digital or custom print or combined, and make a living doing it. I mean, that's my belief. I mean, I haven't cracked it. I don't think anyone has, in sort of a big way. And maybe there is no big set way. Maybe it's individual, but I'm ranting, so I'm going to end there.
So, you guys, so if you were guaranteed your next project would be a success, no matter what it is, what would that project be?
Jeez.
I know, it's a big question.
So many ideas for different projects. I mean, outside of... you know, completely off the rails here, opening up a microbrewery, which I've always wanted to do. I guess maybe it would be to complete one of the stories in my head that I just haven't had a chance to write yet.
If it didn't have to be a new project, I wouldn't change anything. I would do exactly what I'm doing now, because I really enjoy what I'm doing now, and I think it works for me. it's exactly what I love to draw. It's like martial arts, post-apocalyptic, you know, it's action, it's everything that I like. And I wouldn't change a thing about it, except maybe to do it in color if I didn't have to do a day job. That would be really nice, too. If it was a new project, I think what I would really love to do is get back into novel writing and actually include some comic sequences in a printed novel. I would love to do that.
I have to say, like, I definitely think publishing is innovative enough now and cheap enough that I think you can be a little more experimental and do things like that. So that's a cool idea.
Well, actually, it's funny. My answer is almost exactly yours. I would like to get back to doing more prose, which is kind of like where I started, and my first love as a writer. But as far as, yeah, I honestly wouldn't change anything. Chadiana would be the book. If that could be the book that would sell a million copies, that's the one I would want it to be, you know?
I got here, like, halfway through, so you may have covered this already, but is there a particular work that you're sort of... You think, like, it is... What's the must-see, the must-read, but, like, it could be not, like, something that's read, but, like, just, like...
The must-read of other people's stuff, or stuff
yours,
you've done?
Of the thing that you've done.
This
is
going to become,
like,
a...
If you could only recommend one thing, what would it be?
This is going to become a Chadiana ad this
month. Yeah.
That's fine. You can be proud of that.
No, Chadiana would be the must-read for me. Absolutely.
For me, it would probably be, I think it's chapter 19 of What It Takes. Specifically that one, because Colby actually gets to the final goal of the story. And it's all about how she reaches there. And it's a more experimental series of what I've done. The paneling is very, maybe integrative is a word. It's not like square boxes. It's like a tapestry kind of feel. I really like how I managed to accomplish that.
I'd have to say just Bardsworth, because it just appeals to so many people. And I've had readers from, like, young kids up to older adults, and everyone in between has enjoyed it, so I think that's a little less niche than some of my other stuff is.
I did my grandfather died in 2009, and that was the first really big death. And so it took me about 2 years. I did a painted, something like 8 pages or 12 pages, but and the book was called One Last Step. But that, for me, is probably the thing I'm the most proud of. Not because the art is the best I've done, but it was definitely the best I could do at the time, and it communicates my feelings towards him and death itself, and that'd be it for me.
Do you have trouble explaining your obsessive urge to create? To people, friends and family who don't necessarily understand, like people who say, hey, let's hang out, and you say, no, I have to draw more pictures. How do you balance that?
I guess it depends who I'm associating with at the moment. Some people do understand, and then there's everybody else, which is the majority, that, you know, I don't... It's not necessarily that they don't always understand it, but they don't get it, I don't think, you know. Sometimes I think it's like, in theory, yeah, they understand you got to work, but then they don't get why you can't, you know, make the time to do something, you know, that they think would be, you know, simple for you to make the time for. I think the more people have seen that I'm serious about this, they don't I guess they don't laugh about it as much, in the sense, like, not that I've had people laugh in my face or anything like that, you know, but they don't, there isn't that kind of sarcastic, snide disbelief that you're serious about what you're doing, but they still don't quite get it, you know. But I guess I guess to some degree that's kind of the way it is for everybody. I guess you don't really understand the doctor's job unless you've been a doctor.
But doctors do it regular hours and are called in by the
their
superiors, whereas you are your own superior. So, like, you're both your boss and you're the worker. So, you know,
well,
it's hard to explain to people I can't go to your cookout because my boss is forcing me to draw pictures.
Well, you know, I don't want to paint myself in a bad light, but there's those moments where I guess I just have to be a relentless AH about it and just, you know, that's it. Like, draw a line. That does sometimes have to happen. That's unfortunate. But, I guess, I can't always get somebody to understand, but I guess carrying myself and making the decision for me and just kind of have a boundary there is the best way I can figure to handle it. And if they don't understand it, well, yeah, I don't know. I guess they'll be mad at me. I don't know. Yeah.
I was blessed to be born into a family of introverts who are totally down with what I do. I was blessed to marry a man who is also an introvert, who has as much of a time-intensive hobby as I do, which is D&D. So it actually evens out perfectly, and I don't have friends who require strange social things like barbecues. Occasionally, Pete invites me over for, like, beer or pie day, which I very much appreciate. And if I don't manage to make it, he's cool with that because he understands.
And I was lucky at the very onset of starting Bardsworth. I had just moved to California, and my wife was in grad school. So, A, I didn't know anybody to hang out with out there. B, I had no money because we moved out there with basically nothing. And C, she wasn't around. So I just holed up in the apartment and did as much work as I could. And as time went on, you know, I moved back to New York, and I was near my family, and realized I was spending more time away from my work, so I had to start doing, well, okay, I have to do this. And my family, while supportive, doesn't obviously get it. They're, you know, none of them are the artistic type. But they also just don't ask questions. They're just like, okay, fine, whatever.
I struggle really hard with that balance. I don't think I'm balanced in that. You know, and I want to see my friends and I want to see my family. It's hard. I think my version of that is I've tried to make what I do as mobile as possible. Like, I love taking the train down to the city by myself because I will get a ton of work done. And I have tends to at least a couple times a week stay up really late at night. Like, if I know I need to get something done, you know. God bless my girlfriend. She's very supportive. Like, I was like, I'll be like, oh, this is one of those nights. They're like, oh, I'll go to bed at 2. And then, like, you know, 5 a.m. Like, I'm sorry. But it's, I don't think I have balance with that yet. I have a friend. I have a friend who's a fine artist who he has a studio and, like, he has, like, a specific night of the week with set hours with his wife, where she knows, like, okay. I think that's a, if you can do it that way, I think that's a good way to do it. But I don't know. How about you? You write songs. How about you?
I constantly feel guilty in both directions. If I'm at a cookout, I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna be dead someday. And I didn't write a masterpiece because I was sitting around talking to the same people I see at every cookout. This is ridiculous. I just saw you 2 weeks ago. Why are we having another cookout? But then if I skip it, then I feel like a jerk. And so I'm just totally conflicted all the time. And then I'm just filled with rage. I'm like, I don't schedule a cookout a Wednesday at 2 p.m. because for me, Saturday at 2 p.m. is most people's Wednesday at 2 p.m., mm-hmm. you know? It's like, this is my work day. Saturday from like 5 a.m. to midnight is my work day. And it just stinks. But, you know, I want to be nice, too, so I'm just filled with rage.
That's right.
Aren't we all?
It's very hard for me to explain to people what I do, because on top of comic books, which I think drawing, I think people actually get that a little bit better. But everyone thinks that it takes a lot shorter time than it does. And I think it's because, you know, when you draw, you enjoy it. And, you know, you go to a con, you kind of put on a show for someone. And it's the basic shapes. But, you know, when everyone knows when you're at home working on it, I mean, the simplest thing can take forever. I was doing a print for the show, and then it wasn't printing right. So I spent about, like, 3-4 hours color adjusting. And then it was like, the eyes off. And then it went from the hair, and then the knees off. And then at the end of the morning... you know, my girlfriend's like, I was like, you're still up. She's like, yeah, I'm going to come back to bed. I'm like, well, what do you think? She's like, what the hell did you do? You ruined it. And that was in Photoshop. So I had to go back and change it back and then use levels. And it took me 10 minutes. It spent 2 hours or something. It took me 10 minutes. And it's, and even like lettering and just setting up a book or pre-press or getting something to print. It's all stuff that seems really easy and seems like people think they, even when I was at DC Comics and pre-press, we're like, oh, the editor's like, you just push a button, right? And I'm like, no, no. Like, you didn't draw to the trim line and got to extend that shit, which means I got to, you know, draw or whatever it is. So it's very hard to explain to people what you do, not only because of clients and how you find clients, but everything that we do seems like it should be quick. And the reality is, even if it seems like it's quick, it's not. And even if you're not working on something, you're constantly thinking about it. And I think that's just kind of the what we signed up for, to be honest.
So is there any project or a part of a project that you wish you could redo now, knowing what you know?
God.
We're neurotic. We always think, we could have done that better, right?
Well, I mean, there's always your first work, which was probably the closest to your heart, that you never really adequately managed to do because you were a younger artist. Mm-hmm. And that's the work that I refuse to go back and redo because that's that never-ending process. It's a project you're too close to. You're never going to finish it, and therefore I'm not even going to go touch it again.
I forget who said this, but basically... you will never be satisfied with your work because by the time you finish it, you have all those lessons you learned while creating it, and you look back, you know where the seams and rivets are, and you're like, it's okay, I guess. And to everyone else who they just see like a seamless thing, they're like, well, that's great, but you know everything you had to do. You remember all of the, like, I still remember the bad parts of my novel that aren't actually in it because I edited those out. But I still remember them being there, and I'm like, oh, God. So do you feel like that?
I found a loophole around that for me, actually. People always ask me, would I go back and redo the beginning of Bardsworth? Because when I started, it was literally, I drew on 8.5 by 11 computer paper, and I... you know, it was just pen and ink, and it was awful. I didn't know how to draw. I didn't know how, you know, nothing. And I always say, I don't really want to because I like people being able to see the evolution of it. But there was still that part of me that, oh, I want to fix that plot hole or I want to give some more backstory. So what I did was I went back and I actually novelized it. And I wrote a book starting from the beginning, kind of inspired by Phil Folio and his wife who do Girl Genius. And they went and they did... the novelization of Girl Genius, and I thought, well, if they could do it, I could do it. So that it made me feel good because I went back and fixed things that were bothering me, and it's kind of like Marvel had the Ultimate Universe where it was the same but different. Mm-hmm. This is my Bardsworth Ultimate Universe.
For me, yeah, I mean, there's some little things that I guess I could go back and change, but I guess... once a work is finished, I kind of, so far, have been able to kind of walk away from it. I mean, right now I'm getting the sixth issue of Chadiana and the trade together, and I am, like, tweaking some things with the beginning parts of it, but I still feel like since that's not a book, it's not done. So even though the issues have come out, I still kind of feel like it's a bit of a work in progress, but... I mean, there. I'm trying to think. My first published thing was this kind of sci-fi superhero thing, and I don't do any of that kind of stuff. And I remember it was kind of like a I got the job quick because the artist bailed and went MIA, and you know, this group, the Comic Book Artist Guild, which was putting out their third story in the series, needed somebody fast. And I felt like I had no prep time to even, like, sketch the character, the main character of it, or even, like, I was still kind of awkward with working with my references and stuff. But, I don't know that I would even go back and fix that, yeah. I kind of feel like once it's out there, you kind of have to just leave it alone.
Yeah, George Lucas.
Yeah.
For me, like, my own work, I can kind of let go, because I'm proud of what it was, even if it's not perfect. But Tom and I worked on an anthology, and an anthology before that. And those are two things, because you're in there with other artists, that stuff that if everyone else was game and was like, let's redo it, I would totally be in, because that's where you just do something.
I would love to redo that.
Yeah. Cycle then, right?
Yeah, that would be real great.
Well, I'm sorry, if I could just add to it, I guess one reason why I do feel like you shouldn't go back and change something is I know for myself personally, like authors I read or artists that I like, sometimes there's a period of time where I felt like their work was the best or that I was responding to the most, and I guess I wouldn't want to take that away from an audience experience if I start going back and hacking away at something that maybe, you know, a core set of people really would have loved to just have it that way before I started messing with things, you know. So sometimes it's kind of nice to preserve a certain part of time in your work, even if it's not what you feel is your best. Your audience kind of dictates to you what's your best work, not necessarily how you feel about it.
That is true. There's a lot of writers and musicians where their early work is great, and then they just get weird.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, no, or you believe in your own hype.
Yeah.
And it just ruins it. So yeah, I guess just leaving it raw, leaving it that period in your life.
There's this great quote by Dolly that's something along the lines of, those who worry about perfection shouldn't worry. The only one who is perfect is God, saying that if that's your quest, like, it's never, there's always going to be something. There's going to be something down the line. As good as you are, there's always being. I mean, Michelangelo in his deathbed was belly aching about how he didn't quite nail the human figure quite quite enough at 80 years old.
He tried real hard, though. So what are your creative idols? Or I had artistic, but I think that you are broad people, and it may not be directly visual art that inspires you, or visual artists. So who inspired you? Who, when you were your nascent form, like you're a teenager, you looked up to him and said, I wish I could do what you do?
For me, I'm going to guess it was Wendy and Richard Binney of ElfQuest. Had a major influence on the stories that I read, the art that I liked, and got me into comics. Like, our library stocked it. And I had no idea what a comic was outside of Peanuts before that time. And so, fourth grade, library card, freedom. And ever since then, I've really been deep into indie work. I don't follow mainstream very much, but indie work is huge for me.
Aren't they local? Influence. Weren't they local?
I think they were local.
For a while?
Yeah, I recall that.
Yeah.
Anyone else inspired?
I started traditional with Peanuts and Garfield and Calvin and Hobbes, definitely. I think Watterson actually influenced more of my writing than anything, just because he had such a great way with words.
God, he's so good.
He was in. I still go back and read Calvin and Hobbes at least once a year, like all the collections I have.
I included it in my wedding vows, so I can appreciate that.
And then later on, I'm sorry, just real quick. Later on, when I was in college, I stumbled across webcomics just by accident, and it fell down the rabbit hole. Back then there weren't that many, but there were still enough that, oh, okay, this person's linking this, okay, I'm going to go read this. And I just go through the archives. Oh, okay, now I'm going to read this one. And I thought, oh, if these people can do this, tell a story and put it out there for people to read, I can do that.
Do you remember the first webcomic you read?
8-Bit Theater.
Oh, yeah.
By Brian Clevenger.
Alien Dice.
I remember the first one that I read was Sluggy Freelance.
That was my second.
And I honestly spent like months. I worked at a library and I would just click through and just read almost all day. And there was more and more and more. Like, they never ended. I never got to the end. I'm like, and he was making a career out of this. And it was, you know, it was a jumble of continuity by the time I'm like, no, I'm good. But it really was impressive to me to see how much he had written and how many fans he had. Like, a bunch of my friends, suddenly I'm like, I get your screen name, Poinging Ferrets. I know what that's a reference to. And just, it was underground and it just appeared. So, and there was so much of it. And I felt like I was the first to discover it. And it was this underground thing. And then I realized everybody knew about Sluggy Freelance.
For me, first webcomic I read was Penny Arcade, probably. Yeah.
And they're huge. They're still huge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They have their own con, don't they?
Yeah. Those guys did their own
everything at this point.
Yeah.
And what artistic influences or just creative influences?
Earliest or you?
Or just whoever you would look back fondly and you're like, oh yeah, I wanted to be him or her.
Well, I mean, I know that George Lucas was an early influence, but then he kind of became the antithesis of what I wanted to be.
And so that's almost
like
good.
Weird. But yeah, early influences, I mean, probably the two that I still go back to a lot of times is Yasumi Matsuno, who did Vagrant Story and Final Fantasy Tactics.
Oh, yeah.
And Tolkien. I mean, I love Tolkien, so, you know, I always go back to those two a lot. As far as earlier influences go, yeah.
Let's see what else I have here. All right. And you might have sort of answered this already, but if intellectual property didn't matter, like, you could just take any character from anywhere or any book and turn it into a graphic novel, what would you choose? I feel like you're going to say Spider-Man.
I'm going to say Spider-Man.
What would you do with Spider-Man?
You know, I mean, I love the character, and I would just put, like, like, one thing I'm thinking, like, I love superhero comics. I always have. I always will. You know, it's interesting, as you get older, you start thinking about relationships and marriage and death. And I think I would probably just use it to my own, you know, my own version. Like, I mean, I relate it to Peter Parker. So, and I know I always wanted to do the sequence of, like, him and Mary Jane. And, like, you know, if you are married to a cop or you're married to a doctor or you're married to a firefighter, like, what the hell is that like, really, when that person's coming out and it becomes normal, but they might not come home, you know?
Yeah.
And how do you manage that? And also, he's not rich. He's not Bruce Wayne or Tony Stark. So, you know, there's a great sequence in one comic book. It's the only time I've seen it happen where Mary Jane breaks down because she's in credit card debt. And that was the one thing that she could control. And I was like, damn, that's such a good
okay,
good take on it. So, you know, you when you're as a couple, you argue about money. You argue about the way you want to raise your kids. You know,
mm-hmm.
You argue about you're spending too much time at work, or we don't see each other enough, or we're bored with each other. Like, I would just... I mean, the character's always done that, and I'm a big '80s Spider-Man guy when he, you know, was married to Mary Jane. So I would focus on that mixed with, you know, visuals that I think would be cool.
What about
you? I have an answer, but I think I'm going to save that one for the writers panel.
I respect
but
that.
But I do have another answer that I just thought of. I love the animated series Mission Hill.
Oh, if someone else remembers that, that's fantastic.
Yes, it's my all-time favorite anime series. I thought it was just so well done and just amazing. And there was a Reddit AMA not too long ago, over the summer actually, where Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein were answering questions, and I asked them if they were ever considering doing something with it, like comic or webcomic-wise, and I guess there's still some legal issues that they were trying to work something out, but they, you know, they weren't sure that anything was going to happen. So if I could get a hold of that IP, I don't know if I would necessarily be able to draw it because that art style is just so unique,
mm-hmm.
but I would certainly give it a shot because I would love to see it just continue on.
I think I would love to adapt some of Terry Pratchett's work into a graphic novel.
Very cool.
I love those books so much, and there are a few books I already read. For example, Dresden Files, I admit it's like reading crack to me. Like I start the first line and I can't put the book down until it's over. And I know that's been adapted to a graphic novel, but I'm really not a fan. I feel like they didn't actually adapt it. They just took all of the dialogue and then threw it on a page,
mm-hmm.
and called it a graphic novel. So I really love to adapt Terry Pratchett's work into a comic if I were immortal and had 15 hands.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is the problem. We never have enough time.
I guess it's kind of a weird question to answer, like everything. I kind of overthink it. I mean, in one hand, I'm doing Gentleman Cthulhu, so I'm kind of pulling something out,
yes,
you know, from Lovecraft's work. But a long time ago, I kind of gave up the idea of kind of doing fan fiction, fan art, even if it was paid. I guess, you know, it's not that I would never do it, but I don't know that it's like a dream job for me. But if I had to pick something that I was going to adapt, there is one Robert E. Howard story, which I won't put the name out there just in case anybody tries to jump on this before me, that I've always wanted to adapt into a screenplay because I think it would make a great novel. Movie. The only other property that I would love to work on, just because it was such a classic inspiration for me, and I kind of forgot to mention it because it wasn't a single creator, is the Castlevania series. I know Netflix is now developing something for that, so I kind of feel like I missed the boat on that one. But yeah, that would be something I'd love to do something for. And I guess Vampire Hunter D, incidentally, which they're doing something with now,
nice,
too. Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's almost, I don't know, it fills you with fear when people are making or appropriating or changing something you already love. It's like, oh, please do it right. Please don't Ghost in the Shell me. The movie's not even out yet. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I think we're a little over. Any other questions before we wrap this up?
Great work. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks
for being a great
audience.
Great.